Everyone deserves a second chance. I am able to serve as a credentialed Unitarian Universalist minister because I got a second chance. To get one's ministerial credentials, the jargon we use is to become a fellowshipped minister, one must be reviewed by the Unitarian Universalist Association's Ministerial Fellowship Committee. That review process includes reading a long list of books, filling out an elaborate grid showing one's life experience, seminary and non-seminary training, doing an internship, and serving in a clinical pastoral setting. When all of this is finished, the ministerial candidate must meet with the MFC in person. That meeting, the candidate preaches a 10-minute sermon, answers questions from each of the committee members. At the end of the interview, the candidate is ushered out, and the MFC decides whether that person will be accepted into preliminary fellowship or not. They have several choices besides yes. They can say yes with a list of conditions to satisfy. They can say no with a list of conditions to satisfy and invite the candidate to come back for another interview. Or they can say no, we don't want to see you again. That happens. I was signed up to see them in the beginning of 1990 in Berkeley, California. This was right after I finished my seminary training there. I felt quite confident that I would sail through without any problems. My friends and teachers thought so too. What I hadn't expected was how nervous I would be as I walked into that room, shook the hands of the committee members, and began my sermon. Something was off, and I clutched. My mind went blank. I couldn't remember answers to some of their questions, and I must have looked pretty nervous as I replied. In my self-confidence, I hadn't expected the stress of having the rest of my life hanging in the balance of their judgment would affect me in such a disruptive way. As I walked out, I knew I was in trouble. The committee gave me a soft no, that was the word they used, because of their confusion. There was a disconnect between who they saw in the room and who they had read about and who they thought or even knew, in some cases, I was. They gave me a few things to do and asked me to come back. Less than a year later, I saw the committee again, and this time everything went splendidly. At the end of the second interview, one of the members of the committee remarked that they seemed to be seeing a completely different person than they had seen the first time, the one that they had expected to see when they had read my materials that I had submitted. I did get a second chance, and I was able to prove that I have the ministerial presence to do the job. Second chances are very important, and they come in a lot of different ways. Some of us have been offered a second chance in the doctor's office. In a routine physical, maybe our cholesterol or blood pressure is a little high, or maybe we've gained some weight, or maybe our fasting blood sugar numbers aren't that good, and the doctor sits us down and gives us an ultimatum. Change your lifestyle, exercise, and eating habits, or your life could be in danger. Some of us got that lecture after having something like a heart attack. With a stern look, the doctor will say, This is your second chance to live a more healthy life. You may not get a third chance. The more extreme version of this ultimatum may arise from within a person in the throes of substance abuse. When an addict hits bottom, the ultimatum may come from within as make a change or die. That ultimatum comes from a mysterious place, something from deep within. Call it God or spirit or the momentum of billions of years of evolution. Whatever that force is, it shakes the addict enough to turn away from the substance abuse and seek help. They realize that by themselves they do not have the power to make that change, but with the help of a higher power, they can. Those who do make the change in their life and start moving away from the addictive behavior express gratitude for getting a second chance at life. The ones who yearn strongly for a second chance are those who have been incarcerated. Whether trapped in the cycle of addiction or absorbed in a violent gang, tempted by desire for what others have, or just to survive, time in prison can help clear the head and straighten out their lives. I visited a young man in jail a few years ago who had been sent there after several DWIs. Prison was a big wake-up call for him to deal with some of the bad choices that he had made, particularly some of his not-so-good friends. I remember the passion that he had for wanting a second chance to prove himself to his parents, to his girlfriend, and to society. The problem with our criminal justice system, though, is that it isn't well set up for second chances. Too often, the supports aren't there when people are released from jail. They don't get the help to find a place to live, to get a job, or to go to school to become a contributing member of society. There are many ways to make a mistake when you're on parole and get sent back to jail. These ex-cons deserve far more support than they get. After all, how many of us have been following all of the laws exactly? I'm not going to ask for a show of hands. But how many of you have exceeded the speed limit, parked illegally, maybe jaywalked in the past week? And I hope there's no one here who has cheated on their taxes. And what about smoked marijuana? There are young people of African descent who are spending 25 years to life for that crime in prison. Has your skin privilege prevented that? Or has your lack of skin privilege endangered you? Well, our human vulnerability to stray from the way of the Lord, so to speak, makes Jonah such an engaging story. God tells Jonah to go to Nineveh, and he goes the other way. Jonah must know that running away from God's directive isn't a wise choice. But he does it anyway. Of course, God doesn't let him get away with it and stops the ship with a storm. Jonah's lack of courage to do God's will causes great distress to everyone around him as they empty the hold of cargo, hoping to save the ship. And does he care about their distress? No. The captain finds him fast asleep below deck. Today we might say Jonah was in serious denial. Jonah only takes responsibility when they draw lots. When he gets the short straw, it's obvious that he is the source of the problem. Still, the crew doesn't want to throw him overboard and finally realizes that that's their only option. God's not done with Jonah. So God sends that fish to rescue him from drowning. And in the belly of the fish, Jonah finally figures out that he isn't going to be able to run away. Jonah prays for forgiveness. God commands the fish to spit him up on the shore. Then God gives Jonah a second chance. This time Jonah goes to Nineveh to preach against them as God has commanded. There's more to the story, but that's all we can talk about today. The story of Jonah is commonly used in the days of awe for inspiration, as Jews are repenting their sins for the past year, asking for forgiveness from each other. Jonah's impulse to run away is one that is far too common in human relationships. Feelings get hurt in relationships. Rather than apologize and ask for forgiveness, too often the one who causes offense is silent, and the other person becomes resentful. In this sort of relationship breakdown, there isn't any offer of a second chance to get it right. This happens in a lot of families. It happens most often when the emotions are high and the result is disconnection. Effective communication stops happening because of the power of anger. I know I've sometimes preferred to nurse my anger against someone rather than try to work out my discomfort and disconnection and give that other person a second chance. What I may not realize in that moment of self-righteousness is that the harm that I am doing myself by not striving for reconciliation and offering a second chance to mend the relationship. What is lost when anger is frozen in our hearts like this is the life-giving power of offering a second chance. I'm inspired by the selfless love of those who rescue children and animals who've been abandoned and giving them a second chance. People like my cousin John, who has given 49 gallons of blood. He donated one of his kidneys to a woman who he knew who was dying of kidney failure. I was there with his wife and my aunt, Aunt Lois, his mother, as he was going through the transplant procedure. I'm not sure if I could do that for somebody I don't know. I hope I could do it for someone I did. Giving someone a second chance in a small way or a big one, and watching that person use the chance well, survive and thrive, can be deeply meaningful. The last kind of second chance I'd like to talk about this morning isn't a personal one. It's the kind of second chance that humanity needs. Could those who were at the People's Climate March stand up so we can recognize you? Thank you. Thank you for stimulating our awareness of the need for change in our relationship to our planet. I dearly hope there isn't anyone here who doesn't believe that humanity is having a devastating impact on our planet. Some of that impact can be recognized in the steady rise of carbon dioxide, which the march was recognizing, and the other, even more dangerous greenhouse gases in the atmosphere. Some of that impact can be seen in the extinction of species. Just this past week, we have had the 100th anniversary of the last carrier pigeon, passenger pigeon dying. The latest one coming to our attention is the steeply declining population of monarch butterflies on their migration to Mexico. The endangered species list continues to climb, getting only smaller when species go extinct. The pH of the oceans is slowly rising as carbon dioxide dissolves into the seawater. This creates a threat to every sea creature with a shell. The transition of our food production to factory farms that treat animals inhumanely, the huge amounts of toxic effluent generated by these methods that threaten our water and soil, the danger to our water supply by faulty well casings used for fracking oil and gas, are all examples of the trouble we are causing that threatens the well-being of many species, including our own, except maybe the cockroaches and the rats. Well, I don't think I need to go on. We all know the damage that 7 billion of us are doing to our planet as we create and maintain a style of life to which we in the West have become accustomed, a lifestyle we broadcast in movies and on television around the world, feeding their desire to live like Americans and Europeans do, accelerating that threat. And these problems are compounded by what Europeans have done to each other and those around the world. European enslavement of Africans, the policy of genocide by the American government against Native peoples that started with the Doctrine of Discovery 500 years ago, European and American oppression of Central and Southern Americans, Jim Crow policies of mass incarceration, the exploitation of countries to extract their resources from tea and opium grown in Asia to oil in the Middle East to chocolate, bananas, and coffee in the developing world. Some of the worst crimes are the legacies of hatred between ethnic groups left behind when the colonizers leave, as is seen between the Sinhala people and the Tamils in Sri Lanka when I was visiting. We in the developed world are responsible for so many of these problems. We need to wake up to what we have been doing and ask for a second chance to choose a new direction. It isn't anything that we can do as individuals, but it is something that we can demand from our governments that represent us. We can make a commitment to express our desire for our country to be a good global citizen, dedicated to building a sustainable world community with peace and justice for all. The way we must express that desire is by voting for candidates who support this agenda. If we do indeed choose a new direction as a country by asking for a second chance, I wouldn't blame the rest of the world if they were a little skeptical. Alison Bryant had a great blog on allwomenstalk.com about whether to forgive another person and resume a relationship with her or him. As she points out, there are times when couples break up and do successfully come back together. What allows relationships to be repaired between individuals is good guidance for what allows communities to heal too. First and foremost, there needs to be genuine repentance. The other needs to recognize the harm that they have done, regret the action, be willing to make amends, and promise not to do so in the future. The other needs to demonstrate that there has been some maturation that has happened through the process of repentance. The other needs to show that they have learned a lesson from that process. Finally, there needs to be confidence in the goodness at the heart of the person or persons who have harmed us. recognition of our common humanity, our mutual inherent worth and dignity is critical to facilitating the change of heart that allows us to offer and to accept a second chance. Whether we are striving to solve the world's problems or get a second chance to deal with our own, may we get our name written for another year in the book of life. We all deserve a second chance to get it right. And maybe this year we will. So be it.